This is Morning Edition. I'm Lynn Neary, in for Renee Montaigne.
And I'm Steve Inskeep. In a busy part of the nation's capital, Pope Benedict spent the night at the Vatican Embassy, and we're just a few blocks away at the British Embassy, which is where British Prime Minister Gordon Brown is visiting. Brown is meeting with all three presidential candidates today, not to mention President Bush. And this morning he is spending a few minutes live with us. Prime Minister, welcome to the program.
Good morning.
Americans are very familiar with Tony Blair, less familiar with you. Would you describe briefly some way in which you are different than Tony Blair?
Well, Tony and I, of course, worked together for nearly 25 years, and I served with him in government for 10 years, and we are pursuing a similar agenda: economic opportunity, social reform, international engagement, supporting America as we do, a very strong transatlantic partnership. I think what I'm dealing with are the new challenges of the next stage. The new challenges are these: climate change, global economic transformation taking place, China, India, Asia becoming more important. It changes the very economic policies we've got to follow. We've got to emphasize more how we can give people the skills that are necessary for us to get the high value-added jobs.
And then
terrorism and failed states and failing states. These problems are not going to go away, but we may have to deal with them in a long-term way, not simply by military action, which of course is important, and security action, but also by winning what I might call the battle of hearts and minds. So big changes in a new era need new policies, and that's what I'm working on.
When you say you are supporting the United States, is your policy on Iraq exactly the same as Prime Minister Blair, who supported it so strongly?
Yes, indeed. And what we have done over these last few months is try to put ourselves in a position where the Iraqis themselves can take more control of their own affairs. And this is what I call the policy of overwatch, moving from a situation where we are the combat forces in the south to circumstances in which the Iraqis themselves, trained by us and trained by our American friends, can take more responsibility.
Let me ask about that, if I might.
Police and security trained up so that they can do the job, so that a genuine democracy in Iraq can emerge with local people making local decisions about their own affairs.
Let me ask about that, if I might. Recently in Basra, the Iraqi military moved in, tried to take control of the city from militias, ran into terrible trouble. Why did the British forces, who were stationed very nearby, take no part in that operation?
We did take part in the operation. We gave air support to the operation, and so did America alongside Britain.
Did British ground forces go?
But the issue here is this, if I may say so. We are moving from a situation where we are the combat troops to a situation where, rightfully, which is both the British and American policy, the Iraqis can themselves take more control of their own affairs. We have a democracy in Iraq for the first time. We want local government elections in the south so that people move into taking democratic decisions about their own affairs. We want to encourage people in Iraq, particularly in the south where there are huge economic opportunities, to have a stake in the future of Iraq. And so the policy is the right one. It's moving from a situation where we are the combat forces engaged only in military action to where we are supporting the Iraqis themselves, policing their own areas. Now, there's going to be difficulties on the way. It's not going to be easy. You're dealing in some cases with militias. You're dealing in other cases with violent criminals. But at the same time, we are making progress in this policy of overwatch. I think about 40,000 police and armed forces have been trained for the south. We've got another several thousand to train in the next few months. And of course, the economic development of the area will be uneven, and it will take time because there's very high unemployment, but that also is moving forward.
But if the 4,000 troops that were stationed in the south did not get involved in the heavy combat in recent weeks, why are they there at all? Why not take them out?
The 4,000 troops in the south are, first of all, training the Iraqi forces. Secondly, making sure that the supply lines are in order. And thirdly, where necessary, as with air power in this circumstances, we have a reintervention capability. But, you know, the right policy for all of us is gradually to move to a situation, which is also, of course, the aim of everything that we're trying to do, where the Iraqis themselves can take more control. And if Iraqi forces are able to insist on law and order, if Iraqi police forces, and there's been problems, as you know, of corruption in the police and everything else, are better trained and more professional in the future, and if people are seeing the economic development, which we're contributing to in the south, actually happening, and they now have a stake in the future, then that's exactly the situation where, building on the democratic elections in Iraq, we now have local people having more say and more responsibility for their own affairs.
We're talking with Prime Minister Gordon Brown here at the British Embassy in Washington, D.C. We understand, Prime Minister, that you're going to be giving a speech while here in the United States, calling for reform in international institutions, the United Nations, the World Bank, and so forth, and that you want America's help with that. Should we take from that an implication that the United States has been on the wrong course in the last several years when it comes to bypassing international institutions or downgrading?
Well, I think when we're looking at the problems in Iran, we've got international cooperation. I think there's now a move, and we saw it yesterday, for greater cooperation on the environment. When we look at the future of NATO, we're trying to bring in countries all over the Eastern Bloc, and that was the debate that we had in Bucharest. Now, the reason why I'm proposing reform in international institutions is the international order that we have with the United Nations, the World Bank, the International Monetary Fund, was built in 1945 for the problems of 1945. They were built to deal with national governments, with sheltered economies, without global flows of capital, without the global challenges that I've just talked about, where terrorism in one country can almost immediately affect people in any other country in the world, where failed states have huge consequences that run right across the world for even the richest countries in the world. So we need to rebuild our international institutions. We found during the monetary problems, the credit crunch, that our international monetary institutions are not working as well as they should, and I believe we need a better early warning system for the world economy.
You believe that these reforms could affect the problems that we're having now in mortgage industries and elsewhere?
Absolutely. The reforms include, of course, making the World Bank a bank for the environment and reforming the United Nations, but if you take the International Monetary Fund and the international organizations like the Financial Stability Forum, we didn't have a good enough early warning system. We know that the problems happening in one country have huge effects in other countries, but we've got national supervisors to deal with global flows of capital. And we know also that there could be greater international coordination when we're dealing with monetary, fiscal, and, if you like, financial stability policies. And so I've seen in the last few weeks how the regulators, the supervisors, the finance ministers have got together. They're demanding greater disclosure and transparency. If it happens in America but doesn't happen in Europe and the rest of the world, then you can undermine the good that's being done in America. So we need global rules that are global institutions, because we have, after all, got a global economy. And you know, the repercussions of what's happening in our economies for the ordinary homeowner here in America. We have a credit crunch. We have rising food prices because of what's happening in Asia. We have rising oil prices because of instability and also the lack of supply from the oil producers. And we have a combination of problems that can only properly be addressed at a global level. And that's why these reforms are so important.
One other question, Prime Minister, a personal question, if I might. As people in Britain know, you were Tony Blair's number two for a decade and have now taken over the top spot. Have you had moments when you've worried if you might have been a better second person than the man on top who has to sell the policies?
I think when you start a new job, you face new challenges. And every day you wake up in this particular job with a range of challenges that are quite different from the ones you've had before. And I suppose we're going through quite a big economic downturn around the world. And people's automatic reaction to that, as you see in America, as you see in Europe, is to blame the government of the day for not getting things right. But actually, when we look at what we are doing and what other administrations are going to be doing over the next few months to protect homeowners, to do more for the small businesses that are deprived of capital, to create jobs where there are opportunities for jobs missing at the moment, all these things, I think, as I've found when I was finance minister in the late 1990s, that you can solve these problems. And when people see that you're solving these problems, they understand that you're doing the right things.
Prime Minister Gordon Brown, thanks very much.
Thank you.
He's here at the British Embassy in Washington, D.C., where a little bit later on he's going to be meeting with all three presidential candidates. He is also expected to meet today with President Bush, and we'll continue to bring you more coverage as we learn more. You're listening to Morning Edition from NPR News.